This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
Hello and welcome to the Transfer Rumour Mill here on Love Sport Radio. No Wimbledon fan show for you tonight. I'm afraid all of the 9-year pod taken ill, but we've got a glorious show lined up for you. A bumper edition of the Transfer Rumour Mill, starting, of course, in Manchester. Now, a lot of these rumours linked with English players. Bizarre stuff when you've got top teams no longer scouring the globe for the best of South America, the best of Europe, the best of Barcelona, Real Madrid, but looking to Leicester City, and of course, mainly to Leicester City's defence. Harry Maguire, £90 million. Now, Harry Maguire for £90 million English pounds. Virgil van Dijk, of course, is the current record holder for a transfer fee for a defender. £75 million for him, £90 million for Maguire. Sounds like a lot, but you're dealing now with this bizarre market where the premium you pay for an English player is extraordinary. You start at about £15 million. If a player counts as homegrown, you start at around that mark because clubs are desperate for it. I mean, Spurs were so struggling for homegrown players this year that they had to register one fewer player in their squad than they were actually allowed because they didn't meet this metric. As such, United flying around with bids for defenders, if rumours are to be believed. We're hearing today from Sky News that a £40 million bid for Crystal Palace's Aaron Wan-Bissaka has been rejected. Both Manchester clubs in for Harry Maguire, City in for Chilwell as well, if we're believing the Daily Star. And we could have proper Mancunian transfer battles throughout the window because both clubs are apparently also in for Benfica's João Félix. That's in today's Daily Mirror. And normally, when you're dealing with transfers, such as the João Félix deal, such as Matthijs de Ligt, where so many top European clubs are linked that it seems certain to develop into a saga, clubs keep their cards very, very close to their chest. They say, listen, he's under contract. We've got no need to sell. It's called playing hardball, right? You're basically negotiating, giving yourself the strongest possible position you can so that you can ask for as much money as possible. But Benfica take a slightly different approach. Their president has come out and said, listen, the only way we're going to have João Félix next season is if we sell him and they loan him back to us. So perhaps we could see him off to Manchester. But we've got updates for you from across the world of football. Arsenal apparently in for a couple of targets who may be disappointing for Arsenal fans. Dennis Praet and Denmark centre-back Joachim Andersen are linked, as is Dalian Yifang's Yannick Ferreira Carrasco. Now, we were hearing the suggestion that possibly Arsenal had two transfer lists ahead of the Europa League final, one of big-name targets if they were playing in the Champions League, one rather more modest list if they weren't. Perhaps the modesty of that list is starting to come to the floor. Dennis Praet, okay, quite a good midfield playmaker. Heavily linked with top clubs a few years ago when he was still a kid. A 25-year-old Praet to Arsenal, I don't think Gunners fans are going to be overly excited. Liverpool, meanwhile, it's a different story because when you win the Champions League, you can bid for whoever on earth you like. If we're believing all of the papers, they're going to have quite the summer. And as ever on the Rumour Mill, part of our job here is to cut through the noise, give you some information about which of these deals might actually have legs. So don't take these all at faith value. Liverpool in for Matthijs de Ligt. That's if we believe the Daily Mirror. I believe that they're in for him. One thing I will say is that I don't believe they're going to get him. We're seeing links for de Ligt to PSG, who are apparently now in the driver's seat. We're seeing links to Manchester United. We're seeing links to Barcelona. I've said before on this show that I was fully confident he was going to Barcelona. Of course, he's currently in action for Holland in the Nations League final against Portugal. Still 0-0 there in Portugal. I thought that De Ligt was going to go to Barcelona, not least because Frankie de Jong, his Ajax and Holland teammate, has already agreed a deal with Barcelona. Add into the fact the history of Dutch football with Barcelona, Johan Cruyff, total football, all of that. It seems a match made in heaven. But the riches of PSG. I'm going to go on record now. The riches of PSG are one of the most boring things in football. Various people, not least pundit and former West Ham goalkeeper Shaka Hislop, have suggested that other players who've gone to PSG are a cautionary tale for De Ligt. He points to Thiago Silva and to Marquinhos, who both went to the French champions as in their day, the version of what De Ligt is now, as the star young centre-back of world football. Neither of them really did it on the scale that was expected. If you're Matthijs de Ligt, don't go somewhere where the only way you will ever be seen to succeed is if you win the Champions League. Go to a Manchester United. Go to a Barcelona. I'm going to say Barcelona again because it's so clearly the right move. Go to Barcelona and actually work a niche for yourself. Other rumours abounding as well from across world football. On the Mancunian front, we're hearing that David Beckham, there's a name you weren't expecting to hear on a transfer rumour show, Bex wants Antonio Valencia at his brand new Inter Miami side. What's going on with the MLS? Because a few years ago, we were hearing that this was the breakthrough league, right, in world football. And when I say a few, I mean 10. Like when Beckham went to LA Galaxy. It was going to take time. They were going to start by signing aging stars, then break through as an emerging market, become one of the major leagues of world football. When are we going to get to that point? Because fast forward 10 years, we're still dealing with Orlando signing a geriatric Kaká, then a geriatric nanny, I should say. New York City, a geriatric Pirlo. It just is a constant theme. What we're not seeing, with the possible exception of Sebastian Giovinco to Toronto, is star men in their peak going to America. Is that going to happen? Can it ever happen? Or are they just going to satisfy themselves with the dregs, frankly, of the European elite? As ever, you can get in touch with me on 0208 7020 558. That's to call or to WhatsApp, or it's at Love Sport Radio or at Johnny Burrow on Twitter. But coming up, first of all, let's turn our attentions to Manchester with Jack Ranson of BBC Radio Manchester.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
How do you solve a problem like United? We were told that Ollie was at the wheel, that he was going to steer seamlessly round the circuit of the Premier League like Vettel at the Canadian Grand Prix. Not so. The wheels came up shortly after the chant started. And now, as they've constantly been since the exit of Sir Alex Ferguson, United are looking not just for success on the pitch, but for an identity. Look at this squad. Whether you're a United fan or not, is there any player in there who inspires confidence? Is there any player in there who for you symbolises passion, symbolises respect? Is there any player in that squad who, if we're honest, you actually care about? Quite possibly not. With that in mind, this summer is massively important for Manchester United. That's a sentence we have, of course, been saying before every summer for the last 5 years. But it's true. They need not just to improve their fortunes, but get a sense of what it is to be United back. Perhaps that's why they're being linked with every single player who has ever kicked a football to a remotely high level in this weekend's papers. And so we're going to go back to the roots of the transfer rumour mill here, guys. The point of the show is to work out which deals can happen, which deals won't happen, which deals are flat out ludicrous. So let's have a look at some of these. I'm going to start with the Daily Mirror, the finest purveyors of rumours and sometimes reliable rumours, often rubbish, around Manchester United in for Gareth Bale. This is a link that has been rumbling on, quite literally, for years, ever since the Welshman went to the Spanish capital. It's now more likely than ever. He's very unsettled at Real Madrid. Zinedine Zidane, if rumour is to be believed, doesn't really like him. If rumour is to be believed, Gareth Bale certainly doesn't like Zidane. He doesn't like the Real Madrid fans. Apparently, he can't really speak Spanish, and he's only interested in playing golf. The rumour mill is not kind to some people. Gareth Bale is one of them. I think he could go to United. I think he could because, and precisely because, by the way, this is exactly the kind of transfer that smacks of desperation that United have been making for years. haven't got an identity, haven't got a squad that's good enough. What should we do? Let's throw money at it. Let's sign a Galactico. Let's spend hundreds of millions on a superstar player in the hope that it sticks. Angel Di Maria. Nope. Tried him at left wing. Nope. Tried him through the centre. Nope. Tried him off the right, cutting in onto his left. Definitely not. Tried him deeper lying in midfield. Not a prayer. That one didn't click. Who's next? Paul Pogba. The return of the prodigal son. Nope. Now he could be returning again to Turin. United could well be in for Bale this summer, but what does it solve? They pay another 60, 70, 80 million pounds for a huge name. They make a lot of that money back in shirt sales to impressionable 9-year-olds in the greater London area. He gets injured. He's hopeless. They've got another megastar to shift again on wages that no one else will play. They're back to step one. Here's a tip for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Here's a tip, more importantly, for Ed Woodward. Sort out your current squad first. As long as you've got Alexis Sanchez sitting on the bench, not playing football on a rumoured £500,000 a week, you shouldn't be thinking about superstar signings. It's simply not responsible. I don't care how much money they generate. You do not need that many stars who simply are not still up to it. With that in mind, let's look at some rumours for United that might be a little more telling. Harry Maguire. They need a centre-half. They've needed a centre-half for quite some time. I think this has got legs. And often I say on this show, if a transfer fee seems ludicrous, just check yourself. Have a think about how realistic this rumour really is. Well, 90 million quid for Harry Maguire, and I'll preface this by saying I'm a huge fan of Slabhead. 90 million pounds for Harry Maguire is farcical. He's a good centre-half. He's a very good centre-half. Is he a world-class centre-half? Not a prayer. Is he the kind of centre-half who, like Virgil van Dijk, walks into a team and in doing so doesn't just transform the back four, transforms the fortunes and the style of play of the entire unit just by the confidence he exudes, his composure on the ball? No, he isn't, frankly. He's in that old-fashioned model of centre-half, thumping headers, thumping clearances, everything we as English fans like to watch. 90 million quid is silly, and I'm telling you now, it'll happen. Manchester United or Manchester City this summer for around 90 million pounds, because we're reaching a point now in the transfer market where we have to completely readdress what seems like a sensible transfer fee. In a world where Crystal Palace have just rejected 40 million quid for Wan-Bissaka, in a world where Crystal Palace want 100 million pounds for Wilfred Zaha, none of this is silly anymore. None of this is silly. If Zaha's 100 million quid, I'm 12, frankly, million. Once we get into silly season, we are well and truly into silly season. So you heard it here first. Harry Maguire will go to Manchester this summer. I can't tell you if it's United. I can't tell you if it's City. My instinct would be United, because I think when it comes to it, Pep won't be convinced that he can play the ball in the way that Pep likes his centre-halves to. If I'm proven wrong, by the way, that means one very serious thing, that he can do that. Because Pep will not get this one wrong. If City sign Harry Maguire this summer, it will be because Pep Guardiola believes he can become one of the world's great ball-playing centre-halves. If he goes to City, it's fantastic news for England. City, by the way, also in for Ben Chilwell of Leicester. That's in today's Daily Star. This one, I completely believe. This has been, again, rumoured for years. I just like the look of it. I think they need a left back. Benjamin Mendy was supposed to solve all those problems. He had a fantastic first 6 weeks of the season. Assists are plenty, but injury problems, and more importantly, he clearly annoys Guardiola. Clearly, read between the lines of what Guardiola says about Mendy and what Mendy says about Guardiola. Pep is really not a fan of the way that the Frenchman uses social media. And when I talk about the way he uses it, what I mean is the fact that he uses it all the time. He's very, very funny on Twitter. All of us love his tweets. But if you're his manager, it's a nightmare. He turns everything into a joke. And when Pep is looking for a composed, unified, professional outfit, that is not what you need from your plucky attacking left back. I mean, look at when Pep publicly, by the way, in a press conference full of journalists, as they tend to be, when Pep criticised Mendy for using social media too much, Mendy's immediate response was to tweet about it. You couldn't make it up. So a left back there could be a very, very good move. And let's just turn our attentions quickly back to the Nations League. It's still Portugal 0, Holland 0. João Félix is, of course, the young Portuguese star. Scored a hat-trick in this season's Europa League for Benfica against Eintracht Frankfurt. And is tipped by many to be the next Cristiano Ronaldo. Is he going to one of the Manchester clubs this summer? Quite possibly. They're both heavily linked, again in the Mirror. And as I mentioned just a moment ago, their president, Benfica, seems to be conceding defeat. He said the only way we're going to have Félix next season is if we get him back on loan. Well, you can count on one thing for absolute certain. If you are charging a modern super club £84 million English pounds for an attacking player, they're not going to go have him back for a year on a free. Why would they do that? Okay, it could aid his development, but if you're paying 84 mil, you're not doing it for a punt. You're doing it because you think he's ready to play football. They're signing players on potential, Dele Alli to Spurs for 5 million. If that doesn't work out, if he's not ready, no one raises any eyebrows. 84 mil, that'll be City's record signing. You think Pep is going to loan his record signing back to Portugal for a year? You are living in cloud cuckoo land. And more to the point, more than just the fundamentals of it, how it looks externally, this is a kid who is scoring hat-tricks in Europa League semi-finals. This is a kid who's been running games in Portugal all seasons. The old cliche actually holds true. If you're good enough, you are old enough. He's definitely good enough. I don't care if he's old enough. If he goes to a Manchester club, he will play. I think he really could. And I'm going to leave you on the United front with a transfer rumour that isn't true, because I want us to remain critical of these things. United apparently in for 84 mil for Kalidou Koulibaly, the Napoli centre-half. That's according to Corriere dello Sport. 84 mil? 84 mil, really? I know that's what Napoli are going to ask, but for a guy who's been taken apart twice this season by Arsenal, personally, I can't see it. The focus, and we picked up on this at the beginning of the show, the focus for both Manchester clubs is going to be on homegrown players this summer. They need them to fill those quotas. Wan-Bissaka is going to go to United if they meet Palace's asking price. Maguire is going to go to United rather than City. That's my take. And Chilwell will go to City to make up for it. Fantastic English players, young, developing talents, and it can only be good for the English game.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
You're listening to the Transfer Rumour Mill here on Love Sport Radio with me, Johnny Burrow, and it's time to turn our attentions to North London, your London team's first here on Love Sport Radio. And of course, I'm delighted to say that I'm joined on the line by Chris Howard of Gunnerstown and of course the Arsenal Fan Show every Monday night, 8 till 9, right here on Love Sport Radio. Good evening, Chris. Thanks for joining me. Is it going to be a busy summer for the Gunners?
Well, I think many of us hope so, certainly, given the travesty that was the end of last season and that capitulation in the Europa League final. We're looking to the club to make some statements, really, and I think they need to make some statements and start doing it quickly.
In terms of those statements, we're hearing that the club could genuinely be close to a move for Dalian Yifang's Belgian international winger Yannick Ferreira Carrasco. Now, we've spoken about this before, Chris. I think we were both sceptical, but it's sounding like this deal really is going to happen.
Yeah, and do you know what as well? I'm quite surprised at the value, because this is a guy that was successful at Atletico Madrid. He obviously saw the dollar sign going up to China. Hasn't worked out, and so he's on his way. Well, he wants to come back to Europe, but if the rumours are true, it's something like 25 million euros or 30 million euros. Now, given that Arsenal are pleading poverty at the moment, that doesn't surprise me that they'd be in for a move if that's the case. But this sounds like a really, really good move from our perspective. You know, you've got the guy that can play left wing. I think he could play right as well. He's a tricky winger. He's certainly an upgrade on what we've got, and offers us genuine width. And it sounds like it's in our price range as well. Belgium international too. So from my perspective, yeah, happy if it comes off.
But isn't the worry about price range, Chris, not so much the transfer fee as the wages? This is a guy who went to China in the prime of his career as the star signing for Dalian Yifang. We don't know his salary. It's going to be upwards of £200,000 a week. It's probably upwards of £250,000 a week. He's not going to be able to get that at Arsenal, surely.
No, but he's obviously earned it all in China anyway, so he doesn't need to worry about money anymore. So
you think he's not fast?
I suspect I'm being a bit flippant, but I suspect that Arsenal will, they certainly won't be making the mistakes of Ozil and Mkhitaryan. But if he really is that desperate, if his family are that desperate to be coming back to Europe, then it makes sense for him to, you know, maybe take a cut. If he's been sat in China, or well, not sat, but he's been in China raking in the cash, then maybe he realises actually, you know, it's better for me just to be in Europe. I don't think Arsenal would pay him $200,000 a week. He's just not on the same level as, you know, Aubameyang or Lacazette, who have been, as an example, who have been our best players. But it wouldn't surprise me if Arsenal come along and said, you know what, if we can offload Ozil, if we can offload Mkhitaryan, then it frees up some wages anyway.
Yeah, that's a good point. And if they do sign him, which do you think they will?
It sounds really, really positive at the moment. He's talked up I think there's a Belgian journalist, I can't remember the guy's name, but I've seen on Twitter about an hour ago, there's a Belgian journalist, Chris Davidson actually was retweeting it or commenting on it, saying that it sounds like it's pretty close. It sounds like he's happy with from a representative's point of view. It also sounds like the club, Arsenal, haven't made a bid yet, but they're on the verge of doing it once they know that, you know, everything, all the ducks are lined up. So from my perspective, you know, sounds like a good move. It sounds like it's the right price range. He'll come in as a player that will give the fans a bit of an adrenaline shot, and particularly after the horrible sort of month or so that we've had, we probably need it and need it soon.
If he does come in, and I think we're agreeing that he probably will, is he coming in to play as an attacking winger? Or is he coming in to play as a wing back? Because we saw him operating quite successfully in that position in Roberto Martinez's Belgium side at the World Cup.
Well, I think one of the things that we learned from Unai last season was that he likes to chop and change things. So the problem that we had at times was that when we went to a back four, we didn't really have any width. The only width that we ever got seemed to come from Kolasinac or whoever's on that right-hand side if we're playing with wing-backs. But if Carrasco's coming in, then yeah, he could potentially deputise. But I'd expect him to come in as a more forward-moving player. He's the sort of guy that he's good with the ball at his feet, he can beat a man. I'm not sure if he's got the most pace in the world, but we need wide players, tricky wide players that can beat a man. We didn't have that at all, really. You know, Iwobi gets a nosebleed as soon as he gets into the final third. So anybody that could beat a man and then has got a bit of end product about him, I'm all for it.
Wonderful stuff. Something we spoke about on the Arsenal show quite a few times is this possibility that Arsenal had one list for Champions League football if they got it and another list if they didn't. Well, do you think, given the next two names I'm going to read you, that Arsenal's Europa League list, which they're clearly operating off, isn't that impressive? They're in for midfielder Dennis Praet, who's playing for Sampdoria, and Denmark centre-back Joachim Andersen. Do either of those names strike joy into your heart?
It's difficult. I can't say that I am that up to speed on either of those players because, quite frankly, the Italian league bores me to tears. So I try to avoid it at all costs.
Not a fan of Catenaccio.
No, certainly not. But you look at Lucas Torreira, he was a success last season. So if they've identified somebody or a couple of players that could potentially, you know, be of a similar sort of price range and if they could have a similar sort of impact, then it's win-win, isn't it?
It is. Is there a part of you that would rather see Arsenal being linked with massive stars?
No. To be honest with you, where would it really get us? I mean, Arsenal need to be savvy. You know, we can't afford to compete with the City, the Man United, the Chelsea. Well, less over Chelsea's because they can't compete with anyone because they've got a transfer ban. We can't really compete with those clubs with mega bucks. Probably even Liverpool with the money that they get from Champions League, you know, Champions League football and things like that. But so what that means is that we effectively need to start thinking savvy. And, you know, we've lamented the fact that Sven Mislintat's gone. But if this is Arsenal trying to look savvy and look for that player just before they, or those players just before they hit their peak, then we've got to do that. And I'd much rather be signing those types of players than going for a megastar that you're putting all of your eggs into that basket, and then if it doesn't work, you just end up with a similar situation that we've got at the moment with Ozil or Mkhitaryan, in that we've got players we can't shift.
Have you been jilted by Mesut Ozil, Chris? Are you now in a position where you can never love again? You can never trust a star world-class performer in the future?
That's a really good question. No, I probably haven't been. You've generally got me there. I probably have been, actually, because Ozil in the last, this season, it hasn't been a great season in terms of end product. And it does, this time last year, well, in January last year when he signed his deal, everyone was over the moon. And it's just turned out to be a bit of a disaster, really. So I guess you could probably say, yeah, I have, actually.
Well, with that in mind, there's a solution. You've had enough of the German playmaking bad boys. It's time to make a more sensible choice. He drives a slower car, but he's much nicer to you, and he hasn't got a silly haircut. He's called Jordan Veretout. He previously got relegated with Aston Villa. He's now at Fiorentina, and Arsenal could be about to bid 20 million quid for him. What?
I don't hold a lot of stock in this. He played for Villa, or he played for, you know, these players that went away and left certain clubs, and maybe they weren't impressive when they were younger. But because if you look at Ismail Benacer, who was at Arsenal, you know, he never really ripped up any trees.
And he's now rated.
And Napoli are on the verge of snapping him up for a big fee. So I don't mind that. I mean, the best example is Kevin De Bruyne, who didn't really do anything at Chelsea.
Well, Mohamed
maybe
Salah
wasn't really
as well.
Given the chance. Or Salah as well. And, you know, look at them now. So I don't really hold too much stock in this, who he played for previously. It's more the evolution of player, the style of player as well. I think more than anything else, it's not names that we as Arsenal fans are looking for. It's footballing identity and style. You know, we need more pace. I think I said you and I had a chat about this on the show last week. We need a style which is rapid, you know, front to back quickly. Let's use the whip. Let's have some pace in our team, because we just don't have it at the moment.
Yeah, and I think there's another point there, isn't there, Chris? Would you rather have a player who you care about than a star?
Yes, 100%. Do you know what? If Alex Iwobi could actually show some end product,
don't hold your breath.
I'd be much happier. Yeah, I'd be much happier seeing him in the team, you know, ripping up trees, scoring goals, making assists, than anyone that we'd spent 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 billion pounds on. It's actually just about end product. And if you've got players that are moving us in the right direction, then great.
Wonderful stuff. Well, Chris, it's been delightful speaking to you as ever. Thanks very much for your time. Chris Howard there of Gunners Town and the Arsenal Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio every Monday night, 8 till 9. The message is clear for Arsenal. Firstly, those deals are realistic, by the way. Yannick Ferreira Carrasco is going to happen. Dennis Pryor might well. Jordan Veretout, I think, is a longer shot. But let's all keep our eyes peeled. And for Arsenal, it's not about the big names. It's not about the superstars. It's certainly not about the massive wages, because it can't be. It's about clever recruitment, picking up a bargain, and building a team that the fans can get behind.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
You're listening to the Transfer Rumour Mill here on Love Sport Radio with me, Johnny Burrow, and it's time to have a look at the European champions. I'm delighted to say that I'm joined on the line by Matt Addison, who's a freelance journalist and, of course, a Liverpool fan. Matt, you've won the Champions League. Can you sign anyone you want?
Hiya, Johnny. Yeah, you'd certainly have to hope so. I'm not too sure how many players Liverpool are actually going to go after this summer, much to many fans' disappointment. But certainly, if there's a player out there that Jurgen Klopp wants to bring in, you'd imagine his sales pitch is quite simply a little video of that parade from last weekend.
It worked very nicely for Chelsea, of course, when they won the Champions League. It led to them signing Eden Hazard. That didn't go too badly. I'm going to throw some names at you. Liverpool are now one of every club in Europe, frankly, being linked with a potential move for Holland defender De Ligt. Could that happen?
I think at the moment it's certainly a possibility. From what I understand, Matthijs de Ligt isn't, in all likelihood, at the end of the summer going to be at Liverpool, to be honest. I think Barcelona, PSG are certainly in a stronger position at this moment in time. And Liverpool very much think that they've got four really good central defenders. The amount of money it would cost to bring him in, not only the transfer fee, but the wages as well. It does seem slightly unlikely. But, you know, as I said last week after the Champions League final, you know, for Liverpool to improve on what they've done this season, they have to go out and get some of the very, very best players in the world. And certainly De Ligt would fit the bill in that sense. But from what I understand, it's not one that's going to take place, but it's certainly one that I'd personally like to see.
Do you think you've got an advantage from a Liverpool perspective because you already have Virgil van Dijk in the side? De Ligt used to playing with him, of course, for Holland. Could he put a word in?
Yeah, I mean, you'd like to think so. I mean, that would obviously be part of the package if Liverpool were to go to Ajax and say, you know, can we have a little look at the centre-back? You'd have to say that in terms of a role model and a person to learn from, there's not really anybody better in world football than Virgil van Dijk. You'd imagine, as you say, that partnership that they've got at international level could be something that, you know, comes into any kind of factor that Liverpool would look at. But yeah, hopefully that can give Liverpool an advantage, but you never know. I mean, I think with Mino Raiola, his agent, it's not necessarily the best move for his career. It's more perhaps the money that we'll talk about.
Yes, I suspect so. A big theme of the show tonight, Matt, across all clubs has been homegrown players, which we know are a massive focus now ever since the rules about them have come in. Liverpool seem to be getting involved with this as well, because if today's Daily Star is to be believed, you're being linked with a move for James Maddison. Fantastic player, but where does he fit into the team?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? I mean, he's as you say, he's a fantastic player. Obviously, being English, it puts a premium on the price, which might put a couple of suitors off. But you'd say that if Adam Lallana was to leave Liverpool, he'd be a perfect replacement. He's kind of a similar type of player. But it actually looks like Lallana will stay put as well.
Is Lallana done?
The final. Well, from what Lallana said after the Champions League final, I think he spoke to the press association and was very strong in his belief that he was going to be here. He sees himself as a big part of the team. Jurgen Klopp loves him. But, you know, his injury record over the last couple of years, I'm not sure how many starts it was exactly last season, but it was something like 6 or 7, which really isn't good enough. And for me, there'd be no better player than James Maddison to come in and kind of take that role from Lallana. But
is he not a bit advanced, though, Matt? I mean, Liverpool are a team who press high, they work hard, they've got that dynamic front three already. If you throw Maddison into that, do you risk unbalancing the side?
Potentially. But, I mean, Jurgen Klopp's shown it in the past that he wouldn't necessarily bring in a player and use him in exactly the same way that he's been used at his previous club. I mean, we've seen Maddison play as an out-and-out number 10 for Leicester, and that's kind of been his position this season. But you can sort of see him playing sort of that Wijnaldum role, that kind of creative number 8 kind of player in a 4-3-3 formation, the kind of position that Philippe Coutinho was moved into under Jurgen Klopp. I can see him sort of fulfilling that role potentially. Whether he'd be good enough defensively for Klopp's liking, I'm not too sure. But yeah, Liverpool don't play with a number 10. You're right in that sense. But I don't know. I can still see him being valuable to Liverpool. Whether they'd pay the price that it would take, I'm not too sure.
Mm. Liverpool, of course, are no strangers to a transfer battle. They're not scared of going in with other clubs. But they haven't had a real scrap with another English team for quite some time. That could be set to change this summer. If today's Correio de Manhã in Portugal is to be believed, then Bruno Fernandes of Sporting Lisbon is a target for Klopp. But Spurs are interested, City are interested, United are interested. Could you get him? Do you need him?
Well, again, it's kind of a goal-scoring midfielder, isn't it?
20 whether, in the Portuguese league. 20.
Yeah, I mean, it's really impressive statistics. So you'd imagine that he's one that will have come up in Liverpool's analysis over the last couple of seasons. Has been a really exceptional performer. But as you say, there's a long list of clubs, but I think there's no reason for Liverpool to miss out to any of those teams. I mean, Manchester City, I think, would prove to be the biggest draw, but from what I've heard, they've got bigger priorities than him in mind at this moment in time. If Liverpool were to go head-to-head, say, with Tottenham or with Manchester United, who've been linked with him as well, you'd imagine that Liverpool would be able to put together a package that was sort of enticing enough for him to choose them over the other clubs. Certainly, you know, the Champions League is an important factor, I'm sure, for the player, as it will for any player this summer. You'd imagine that Liverpool would be right in there for him.
Do you think there's an element with that for Jurgen Klopp of wanting to make a statement of taking on the other top English clubs and going, come on then, we're bigger than you?
Perhaps. I'm not too sure about that, to be honest. I mean, he's very much focused, and the whole recruitment team at Liverpool are very much focused on finding value in a market where other clubs wouldn't necessarily have seen it. And we've seen that with Andy Robertson, with Mo Salah, to name just a couple of those players. So Liverpool is kind of, they do kind of think a little bit outside of the box. And I think Jurgen Klopp in particular, Michael Edwards, the head of recruitment at Liverpool, they're more concerned with getting the right players, the right type of player to come in. If they have to compete with other teams, then we'll see where that goes. But sometimes the best thing for Liverpool is to find that hidden gem. You don't have to pay them as big wages, which the owners, FSG, absolutely love. And it's kind of a project player almost for Jurgen Klopp, where he can bring them in, he can get them used to the system, get them playing the way that he wants them to play. And they don't always go for the obvious targets.
Mm. The potential signing of Bruno Fernandes has been called like adding cream to strawberries, which is a wonderful way of describing the addition of a top player to an already top team. If you had to identify one or two players currently in world football who would be like the cherry on the icing on the top of a Champions League winning cake, who would you go for?
I mean, it's a really difficult question. When you look at Liverpool's first 11, there's not anywhere that you'd say really needs improvement. I think if you look at the fullbacks, centre-backs, they're really well-stocked. I think the one position would be kind of that creative midfielder. I don't think Liverpool have ever really replaced Philippe Coutinho since he left. So somebody who could create a little bit more from midfield, potentially.
So do you think that Madison deal is quite likely then, Matt?
I don't think it'll be Madison specifically, just because I think that is a little bit obvious. As I said before, you know, Liverpool tend to look at a different kind of player than that. That just seems a little bit too obvious to me. But certainly I think it would be that kind of number 10, number 8 kind of mould of player that will come in this summer. And the other priority for Liverpool is a backup left back, because they've only got Andy Robertson there. But in terms of names, there's been really no links to Liverpool at all this season.
Do you think there need to be?
Well, you off the back of the current season, the way it's gone for Liverpool, obviously 97 points, Champions League final that they won, you'd say, well, they're obviously in a good place. But you always have to add more quality. If you can get a world-class talent to come in, which there's no reason why Liverpool wouldn't be able to convince someone to come, you do absolutely have to go and do that. You have to keep moving forward. The other complication, of course, is that they've got Naby Keita, who will have settled for another 12 months. They've got Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, who missed the entirety of this season. Maybe he could be that Coutinho kind of, not replacement directly, but in terms of his position, perhaps. So it's a really difficult one to judge. Personally, I'd like to see De Ligt, as we discussed. I just think he's potentially a once-in-a-generational talent at centre-back, and as much as Joe Gomez has been brilliant, Joel Matip, and obviously Virgil van Dijk as well, I'd love to see him come in. But it's going to be really interesting to see when and where Liverpool do move in this market.
Here's a name for you. You've already mentioned it. Felipe Coutinho.
Yeah.
Could it happen?
For me personally, I would take him back. I just think he's too good. If Liverpool got the opportunity to bring him back in, then all is forgiven from my perspective. But I just think there's absolutely no chance of that happening. I think he's certainly, he didn't leave in the best possible way. Jurgen Klopp doesn't like that kind of attitude and the way he forced himself out. Klopp said before in the past, you know, once a player moves on, that's it. He doesn't want to bring them back in again. You can certainly make a case for Coutinho being sort of too good to make that a fly there. But I think it would take a very, very cheap deal for Liverpool to consider going back for him, which I just don't see Barcelona cutting their losses that cheaply this summer just yet.
That's an interesting tip. Now, we've talked a lot about potential entrances to Anfield. I want to talk about a potential exit, because we're hearing in today's Daily Mirror that Liverpool could have a look at letting Harry Wilson go. This is in the Daily Star as well. Apparently, they might be looking at letting him go for 20 million quid with Hoffenheim and Red Bull Leipzig interested. Would you let him go?
I'd like to see him be given a little bit of a go in pre-season, give him a couple of games, just sort of see where he's at, reassess him again. But I mean, I think, to be fair, I've seen him for a few seasons now. I saw him for Liverpool's academy when he was coming through, and he always stood out as being a really real, you know, a top player. If you can put the ball in the back of the net as consistently as he does, not even from a forward position, he's more of a winger or a number 10. So to get those numbers on the board, he's obviously got huge talent, but whether he's got enough to break into a Liverpool team which has so much depth and so much quality, I'm not too sure. If somebody was to put sort of 20, 25 million on the table, I'd be surprised if Liverpool turned that down this summer. And he is 22 now, of course, as well, so I think from his perspective, he's probably, I mean, he's a Liverpool fan, so of course he'd like to stay at Liverpool and become a first team regular, but perhaps he's looking at it thinking, I've got to go somewhere permanently now.
Is this a concerning sign, not just for Liverpool Football Club, but for football more broadly? Because in Wilson, we've got a player who had a really fantastic season on loan. It's his first chance of first-team football. He grabbed it with both hands. Sensational at Derby. Couldn't realistically have had a better season. And yet, he's very unlikely to get a decent bite of the apple at Liverpool. Have we seen the last of young British talents breaking through into the first teams of Premier League clubs?
I think, yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? I mean, for managers like Jurgen Klopp to take a risk on him, he'd have to leave out, say, Mohamed Salah, which he's just never going to do that. So I think you do have to be a real special talent. And Trent Alexander-Arnold, Joe Gomez, they've come through recently-ish, over the last couple of seasons, shown that it is still possible, and if you are at that very top level, as I think those two are, you will get a chance. But it is becoming more and more difficult, there's no doubt about that. I think Wilson will go, and he'll be a Premier League player, or, you know, a top flight, whether that's in the Bundesliga or somewhere else, and he'll be a very good player. But to break into this top six now, you've got to be better than very good. You've got to be absolutely world class because of the money and because of all the factors that, you know, everyone's well aware of. It is becoming more difficult. I don't think it's impossible, but maybe, as we've seen with Harry Kane, you know, maybe you've got to go out and have a couple of loans, prove yourself, and just be patient, and then come back.
Send him to Millwall.
Maybe it's a longer process.
That'll make a man out of him. Matt, thank you ever so much for your time. Lovely to speak to you. Matt Addison there, freelance journalist and, of course, a Liverpool fan. I really like the look of Harry Wilson. And Matt's right, he's not good enough for that Liverpool team, if we're honest. He's been linked with Newcastle. I want to see him play football in the Premier League. I want to say, God, that's a bad miss. I shouldn't stop mid-sentence. But Portugal have just almost... Oh, he's offside. All is forgiven. All is forgiven. Gini Wijnaldum was offside, tried to dink the goalkeeper, hit it straight at him. That could have been an embarrassing one. Coming up, let's have a look at the Nations League final.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
You're listening to the Transfer Rumour Mill here on Love Sport Radio with me, Johnny Burrow. And the Nations League final is starting to hot up. It's 0-0. Portugal and the Netherlands in the Portugal. Just getting a little bit more lively. Cristiano Ronaldo bursting through that Dutch defence. Have to say, Memphis Depay looking quite lively at the other end as well. But just 0-0. And we saw, of course, England-Switzerland finish 0-0 earlier. What does this imply? Does it imply that these teams aren't taking the Nations League seriously? Does it imply, perhaps, that at the highest level now in international sport, teams are very, very evenly matched. The margins are incredibly fine. I think that second point is true. But do you think that international teams are being set up too negatively? This Portugal team has got some fantastic players in it. It's got the likes of Ruben Neves, who excelled for Portugal this season as he whips a corner into the box. Ronaldo's the obvious name, but it doesn't stop there. João Félix is one of the great young attacking talents of Europe. Bruno Fernandes, as we've covered all show, has been heavily, heavily linked with virtually every top club in England. And yet this is a side who are essentially set up to soak up pressure, then spring forwards on the counter-attack and just give the ball to Ronaldo. Bernardo Silva is used as a sort of outlet, and nearly a bundled goal there from Portugal on a corner. You just wonder whether things could be a bit more exciting. England versus Holland was a better advert for this tournament than almost any other game. Switzerland versus Portugal was all well and good, but it was Ronaldo versus Switzerland, and Ronaldo obviously won. The question for him, of course, is can he get those final 22 international goals that would make him the record goal scorer at international level for all time? People are saying he can. They're saying what? 7 internationals a year, roughly. He's 34. He'll still be playing for Portugal when he's 37. Will he? I know that he works incredibly hard, but will he? He's in fantastic nick physically, and he'll get picked longer than he should for Portugal, if we're honest, in the way that Beck's got picked for England longer than he should because he's Ronaldo. But 37, 37, are we not underestimating the extent to which a player's body can degrade in the last few years of their career? If he's still going, fair play, but even if we're going, what, 7, 8 internationals a year, even if he plays for 3 more years, you're asking what is in footballing terms a very old man to score a goal a game at international level. I'm afraid, and we had this discussion on the Love Sport Review show earlier about who's going to win the Golden Boot in the Women's World Cup. It was suggested by Chris Slegg, author of the Women's Football Yearbook, that it will probably be an American player because they've got an easy group. They've got the likes of Thailand in that group. And I suspect this is the question for Ronaldo. The issue is going to be, who do Portugal get in qualification for the next World Cup? If they get the Faroe Islands, Andorra and Moldova, he can score 3 hat-tricks twice a season. And happy days, he'll break Pelé's records. But if they get Italy, England, Spain, Holland, suddenly it becomes rather harder. And by the way, lovely to see this Holland team back at the top end of the international game. They've been a sleeping giant for a couple of years, bereft of star names such as Iron Robin, such as Robin van Persie, such as Raphael van der Vaart. But this new young generation, we saw them excel in the Champions League this season for Ajax. They're quite something. Frenkie de Jong, Matthijs de Ligt, just oodles of talent. Donny van den Beek as well. And of course, Quincy Promes and Memphis Depay doing the business up front. It's going to be close. It's going to be lively. It's still 0-0. We'll be bringing you updates throughout the show. Can anybody nick one in normal time? Can anybody nick one in extra time? Or will it go to penalties? If it does, both sides will be wishing that they could call up Jordan Pickford. And will, of course, VAR rear its head again? It's been a very controversial talking point this tournament, this game week, as it were, as it has been all season, and I suspect it's going to be very lively in the Premier League next season too.
This is Love Sport.
You are listening to the Transfer Rumour Mill right here on Love Sport Radio with me, Johnny Burrow, and former Leighton Orient man and Spurs fan Graham Butler. And Graham, we've got the tragic news that Leighton Orient manager Justin Edinburgh has died at the far too young age of 49. I know that you had some dealings with him. Just tragic.
It's really hard to sort of comprehend, and as we was just saying off air, Johnny, it's just really hard to get your head around it. You know, he's 49 years old. He's the season that they had last year, the euphoria around everything. He's held in such high regard, or was, unfortunately, was held in such high regard that everything should just be geared towards League Two next year. You know, you really just don't plan for something like this. It's hard to deal with because it wasn't an ongoing illness. There wasn't any foresight to say, you know, something, he's not been feeling well lately, this has happened or that's happened. As I said to you again off air, like we was with him in Madrid last week. You know, he was literally standing in front of me when I was out there with Spurs and family and stuff like that, and he's singing up there, dancing. He looks genuinely fit and healthy. My brother-in-law spoke to him just outside the ground just before he went in, had a good chat with him. He seemed happy, jovial, you know, in really, really good spirits. He was a Tottenham ambassador. He'd done a lot for the Legends. He was actually supposed to be playing in a Spurs Legends game this afternoon. So everything was just as normal. It was just an off-season for him, really. And then obviously you had the tragic news on Monday that he'd sort of he'd been admitted to hospital. Everyone was assuming heart attacks or cardiac arrest because there wasn't any development from the club. There wasn't anything coming out. So you kind of think the worst, really, without wanting to. And then we heard nothing really all week. And you're kind of just glued to social media and you want to hear something, but then you feel like, okay, I'm not hearing anything. Maybe he's not very well, but he'll pull through. And it was hard yesterday when I was sort of sitting with family and that, my phone just kept going off and off and off. And I was like, I need to, what is this, you know? Mm. And then you go to it and it was just friends, family and the Orient updates through social media and that. And it was just, you kind of just go numb. And you sort of have goose pimples and stuff. And this horrible shock comes over you that I didn't know Justin personally, but he was the manager of my football club. And I know a lot of people at that club and I speak to one player in particular, a young lad I talk to quite a bit. And it was just so hard talking to him. And it was trying to work out. I mean, for me personally, it's hard to accept and hard to take, but I genuinely can't imagine or begin to imagine what these guys feel with the players, people like we've seen Joby McEnough and Dean Brill on the telly. And
yeah, emotional tribute.
It was horrific to watch because someone like Joby has had a lot in his career. He's gone through a lot, experienced a lot of highs and ups and downs, but he's never experienced this. And the relationship they had with Justin on personal levels, not just as a manager of the football club, but he instilled everything into that club. And they was on a journey. They'd only just started, and it's now been taken away from them. And I've been struggling, sort of talking all day and that. And you just sort of sit there talking to yourself, and you kind of sit there saying, "How does the club move forward from this?" I genuinely don't know. They've got to, and they will do, and I'm sure in time they will do. But you look at it now, and I sit here and say, like, as Dave alluded to outside, it's the worst time impossible. Not that there is ever a good time. No. But you're gearing up for a new season. Everything. How do these guys now go back to pre-season?
Yeah.
How do they gear themselves up for a good crack at League Two? If I was a player now, you'd be sitting there going, I can't be bothered.
In the scale of things, what's the relevance?
Exactly. You know, what is football now? You know, it is totally irrelevant at the minute. I guess they will change and they will all club together and they will get on with it. I get that. You know, these things unfortunately have happened in the past to other teams and managers. And you somehow club together and get on with it. But I look at it now and I work. My daytime job is around the corner from Orient. When I come into radio, I drive past the ground. And it's just, honestly, Johnny, it's the most horrible, eeriest feeling at the minute. Mm. And I can't, like I said, I can't begin to imagine how the guys are feeling and how they move forward and sort of progress. It's really hard.
Obviously, this would have been unbelievably tragic in any context, but does it feel crueler because it comes after such highs? Not just for Leyton Orient in terms of that promotion, that feeling that we've spoken about before of having Leyton Orient back somehow, but also for Justin personally, of witnessing Spurs in a Champions League final. This must have been one of the best years that he's had in football. And to have him leave us at this point seems especially harsh.
You've hit the nail on the head. He openly said at the end of the Orient season that was the best season he's ever had. It's the best 18 months that he'd been involved in football. I know he'd had promotion from that league before, but he said the achievements that he had at Orient eclipsed anything that he'd achieved in his managerial career. You know, he'd started from the bottom, Billericay's, Grays and stuff. He'd done his hard yards. He was a Premier League footballer. You know, everything about the way he'd progressed and as a 49-year-old and what he'd done in his career, he hadn't retired from Premier League football and gone straight into a Premier League manager's job. You know, the guys are fortunate enough now. You look at Lampard, Gerrard, the jobs that they're getting now. You know, Justin had gone to Grays, he'd gone to Billericay, he'd gone to Braintree, he'd got stuck in with non-league football. And the Orient job, I feel, was sort of like a culmination of all the hard work that he'd done. And he openly said the best 18 months he'd had of his career was with Orient. You know, when he, you've probably seen it as well, Johnny, the video clip on social media of when he's in the change room and he said, when I joined the club, there was only one way they were going, which was Conference South. And it was true. You know, they was in such a terrible state. And he come in and he steadied the ship. And then obviously what he done last year was absolutely fantastic to the club. And he ended as a champion, you know, and to go and watch Spurs in the Champions League final, his other main club that he spent so many years at. As a person, he must have just been feeling things just cannot get any better at the minute. You know, it must be a fantastic feeling for him. And to know that now that that's just been cruelly taken away from him and his family, and you kind of just hit rock bottom. And I genuinely feel so terrible for them.
No, it's an absolutely awful thing to happen. And of course, the thoughts of everyone here at Love Sport Radio goes out not just to Justin's colleagues and players, but of course to his family and friends as well, with the sad news that Leyton Orient boss Justin Edinburgh has passed away at the young age of 49. A quick goal update for you all from the Nations League final in Portugal. It is Portugal 1, Holland 0. A fantastic Gonçalo Guedes strike. Coming up, we're going to have all the latest transfer moves, from Tottenham Hotspur with Ricky Sachs. Last word on Spurs and Spurs fan show. He's a Tottenham man through and through, and I know he wants to say a few words about Justin as well.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio. Your fan station.
You're listening to the Transfer Rumour Mill here on Love Sport Radio with me, Johnny Burrow and Graham Butler. I'm delighted to say that we are joined on the line by Ricky Sachs of Last Word on Spurs and, of course, the Spurs fan show every Thursday night, 8 till 9, right here on Love Sport. And, Ricky, we've just been discussing the awful news about Justin Edinburgh. I know as a Spurs man through and through, you just want to say a few words about him.
Oh, for sure. I mean, good evening to you, Johnny, Graham. Terrible news about Justin Edinburgh. You know, a true Spurs man. He was out in Madrid only a week ago to watch the Champions League final. He won the FA Cup, won the League Cup with the club. We can't forget, if anyone remembers that League Cup final against Leicester, where Spurs went on to win it, and his famous incident with Robbie Savage. That will live long in the memory. But, you know, for what he's done at Orient last season, you know, to get them up and the way he's done it, it's just devastating news, and it does put, you know, life into real perspective and football generally. And what we have seen over the weekend is all the football family come together in what is such a tragic loss of a human being at such a young age.
Yeah, really, really awful stuff. And as I say, all our thoughts goes out to him and his family. Of course, transfer rumours in the scale of things seem rather insignificant, and no one at Tottenham, even in the recruitment team, is going to be remotely fussed about Giovanni Lo Celso, Bruno Fernandes, or frankly any name I could throw at you on a day like today. But we have got some news emerging from the club. Let's start not with Lo Celso, but a newer name, Bruno Fernandes, a potential £60 million target from, of course, Sporting Lisbon. That's in today's Daily Express. Would he come in to replace Eriksen, or would he partner him?
Well, from my understanding, it would be a plan that would come in to look at a direct replacement for Christian Eriksen. I mean, he's a Portuguese international, Sporting Lisbon captain. He scored 10 goals and notched 13 assists in 31 league games last season, which has attracted a lot of European clubs. I think for Spurs, he'd be a player as an alternative if they can't get Lo Celso. From what we seem to be reading and reporting on, he seems to be Tottenham's number one target in the midfield to replace Christian Eriksen. But obviously with Fernandes, there is a lot of interest as well from Manchester United. So Spurs aren't going to have it all their way in terms of, you know, getting that race over the line for Fernandes. I think there'll be a lot of interest. But I think Lo Celso is the man they want to replace Christian Eriksen from what we're reading over the last week or so.
So something we talk about a lot on this show, Ricky, is which rumours are believable, which aren't, and trying to work out how to weigh up different sources, differing reports. So we got Sky Sports saying that Lo Celso really wants to sign for Spurs and that it's going to get done. The Express, rather, are saying he doesn't, and that's why Fernandes is coming in. Do you think that Lo Celso is the more likely move?
Well, what I will say is I think that Chelsea is the preferred player they want, and what you might be seeing is the Fernandes rumour in the background potentially as a smokescreen in the hope that Betis may drop their valuation so Spurs could go in and swoop the Chelsea. I mean, he's a player that has played European football over the last year or so in the Europa League. He's a traditional central midfielder. He's capable of playing slightly further forward as an attacking midfielder as well. You know, 16 goals and registered 6 assists in 45 games for Betis last season. He's a really promising player. Obviously, he'd be working on his compatriot Mauricio Pochettino at Spurs. And I think Tottenham, they need to ensure this summer with the players they're bringing in, they have to hit the ground running. And of course, bringing in a foreign player, you've never got that guarantee. I mean, Spurs have been there before when we signed the Magnificent Seven, which we had the likes of Soldado and Lamella. And I think a lot of Spurs fans are picking up on the fact that watching Lo Celso, he's of a similar kind of player to Eric Lamella in terms of likes of playing that attacking third, has got the capability to score goals, create that final ball. And so I just hope that, you know, he hits the ground running a lot quicker than what Eric Lamella did. But, you know, I would hope there's been a lot of extensive scouting that has gone on. Eriksen's a wonderful player. And in an ideal world, of course, you want to keep him. But I think it Spurs in a very difficult situation with Christian Eriksen. The player's publicly gone on record to say he wants to leave the club. And as a fan, you know, if a player wants to leave, I'm all for the fact that you can't keep them if they want to go. So what Spurs have to do is try and get the most amount of money as possible. And with Spurs chairman Daniel Levy, that's exactly what he will do. He will extract the highest fee possible. And the most important thing for Spurs is how they now go out and spend that money to go and bring in a replacement that is capable enough to match Eriksen and hopefully go on to be even better. Because what I will say is we did see Liverpool when they sold Coutinho. I think many were concerned from a Liverpool supporters perspective how they would replace him. They went out, they strengthened the squad in the areas that they were weak. They brought in a new goalkeeper in, obviously, Alisson. They went and bought one of the best centre-backs that has gone on to be in the Premier League across Europe in Van Dijk. And essentially what they've done is it made their team stronger overall. Now, with Eriksen, don't get me wrong, he can be the heartbeat to this Spurs team. But over the last 6 to 9 months, we haven't seen the best of Eriksen on a consistent basis. There's been games he's been good. He hasn't been excellent throughout the whole course of last season. Therefore, if Spurs do sell him, and can go on to improve the squad as a whole and make it more well-rounded, there's no difference why this could be, you know, a new emerging Tottenham side that are even better without Christian Eriksen.
Ricky, with that in mind, I think as fans and as sort of journalists like yourself and that is the ideal scenario. Everyone knows and everyone can see that, with all due respect, getting rid of Eriksen, you can strengthen in 3 or 4 different areas and become a more rounded team rather than being reliant on one. Is there this problem with Levy that he will let this drag and drag and drag and get as much out of Eriksen as you can? But with that, obviously, we all know with him and Spurs, we're going to be a sell to buy a team. So with dragging Eriksen out, does that now put the Lo Celso, Bruno Fernandes, Draxler, whoever we're going to be linked with, on the back burner because he's dragging out Eriksen, and therefore us sort of buying someone with about 5 days to go before the transfer deadline day, and then you don't see him for 6 months because he hasn't had a pre-season? Do you reckon that's going to happen again, or is he going to get it done quickly?
Well, I don't think Graham Spurs can afford to wait. And the issue is, like I say, if you do so, Eriksen, they know you've got that big money waiting there anyway. So yeah. If anything, now is the better time to go and do a deal because, you know, Eriksen's going to go. I think we have to accept that the player has already said he wants to move. You know, he came out this week, you know, with the quote saying that, you know, well, if Madrid don't go for me, I'll try and negotiate a new contract at Spurs. I mean, I think like Alistair Gold rightly said, you know, really well-respected journalist at Tottenham, you know, he said himself, he's almost like saying, well, if I can't get a better girlfriend than the one I've already got, I'll stay with the one I've got at the moment. I mean, it's just bizarre words. And if a player wants to leave, I'm always of the mindset you shouldn't keep a player if he wants to go. And he's been a wonderful servant to Tottenham, 6-7 years of service. Been great, but at the end of the day, if you don't want to be here, and let's not forget Tottenham were Champions League finalists last season, you know, if you want to be a big club, you have to start acting like a big club. And that's the same for the chairman, that's the same for the manager. I mean, Maurizio, I think for him this summer, I would like to think that he's only staying at Tottenham because he genuinely believes there's a long-term vision for Spurs to get to a Champions League final again in the near future. It's not going to be a one-off. The same with Spurs. They need to make their mind up if they want to just be a top four team in terms of competing for the top four, if they genuinely want to go for the Premier League. And if they want to go for the Premier League and they want to be serious in the Champions League, they're going to have to improve this squad, because it's at a point now where it does need improvement in several areas. You've got the situation at centre-back with Fabio Alderweireld. It looks like he's going to go this summer. Do Spurs believe in Juan Foyth, or do you look out and see what's there in terms of, you know, there's Joe Chimanderson, there's Nathan Ake, there's links at centre-back at the moment, and then you've got the situation at right-back with Kieran Trippier. He seems to be angling for a move. He's admitted he might not be here after the summer. So again, that's a certain situation you've got. I mean, Serge Aurier hasn't looked really great at right back. So, you know, that's a whole entirety of in itself in that situation. Danny Rose has come out this evening and said that he wouldn't be surprised if he's not going to be at the club come the end of this summer. So Spurs in different areas, Graham, like you've alluded to, you know, there is situations where there needs to be improvement. And in order to kind of, like I say, push this squad on, it's at a point now where Pochettino, I don't think he can do anything more with his squad. I think he's exhausted the tools at his disposal. And for Spurs to go any further in terms of being a team that want to seriously compete for the Premier League, want to go further again in the Champions League and go far, as they did last season, they are going to have to look to improve the squad.
Just as one final name to discuss on that, Ricky, Julian Draxler of PSG. What do you make of that?
Well, I think, again, Julian Draxler is a name that's been linked. I don't see that being a Spurs target. I've got to be honest with you. There's been a lot of reports over the weekend about potential for him. He's a name that's always rumoured, but I just think, naturally, Tottenham are linked with so many players, as you guys know, and because of the fact that the club, you know, where they are now, they're a Champions League finalists, as we know, they're going to be linked with a whole host of them throughout the summer. And, you know, Johnny, you've got the horrible job of trying to maybe dig out the truth from the false ones. But
well, you're doing it for me, mate, at the moment.
Well, I'm trying. I don't think Julian Draxler is a target for Tottenham. I think if you're going to ask me their main targets this summer, we haven't really spoken about him, but Ndombele is another one where I think, if you're going to say who's going to push this squad on, Ndombele is the man they want. He's a powerful midfielder, drives with the ball, can score goals, has got a good vision for a pass. He's almost like a combination of Sissoko and Dembele together. You know, he's a wonderful, wonderful midfielder.
Well, Ricky, stay tuned, because later in the show, we're getting all the latest from Ligue 1 with Jeremy Smith. And he's going to be giving us the Lyon lowdown on Tanguy Ndombele. Is he as good as everyone is saying? Ricky, wonderful to speak to you as ever. Thanks for your time. Ricky Sachs there of Last Word on Spurs. And of course, the Spurs fan show right here on Love Sport Radio every Thursday night from 8 till 9. Coming up, United.
For the fans, by the fans. Love Sport Radio.
You are listening to the Transfer Rumour Mill here on Love Sport Radio with me, Johnny Burrow, and Graham Butler. And we're going to Manchester. We're doing United, we're doing City, and we're actually doing a bit of a transfer battle between the two, Graham, because we're hearing that both sides could be in for slabhead Harry Maguire, a fantastic player. Reported in the Daily Mirror today, he's going to cost 90 million English pounds. Is that too much money?
When you said slabhead, I thought you were talking about Josh Coulson. I was thinking Man United and Man City in for Josh Coulson. He's going to be, yes, he's. I've got that song that the England fans were singing today in my head now when you've mentioned him. 90 million is, yes, I think in today's prices, it really doesn't surprise me that the numbers that are bandishing about the last 3 or 4 years have been absolutely ridiculous. The fact that he's English, the price has gone up anyway. But 90 million, I mean, how old is Maguire? 27-ish? I think that money could be invested particularly elsewhere. De Ligt, for instance, is one that if I had 90 million to spend, would I spend 60, 70 on it on De Ligt or 90 million on Maguire? I know all day long where my money would go, because at sort of 19, 20, De Ligt's value will double in 4 or 5 years' time if his progress is what it is at the minute. But yeah, 90 million for Maguire. If someone pays that, Leicester have done really, really well.
Yeah, world record fee for a defender. Imagine that. I'm delighted to say that we're joined on the line by Will Lynn, who is a journalist and Manchester United fan. Good evening, Will. Thanks for joining us. 90 million quid for Harry Maguire. Yes or no?
No.
Straightforward. 70 million quid.
No.
50.
Possibly.
It's like the world's worst inverse auction, yeah, isn't it? Are you saying no because you think the club have got a realistic chance of signing Matthijs de Ligt?
No. I'm saying no because I don't think he's worth a lot of money. If we're talking in terms of if we've got nobody else, we might as well go for him. But if he's too old to warrant that sort of money, you know, there has to be some sort of potential going forward in future years. He's got 5 years, maybe a few more at the top level. He's not worth that sort of money right now, as far as I'm concerned.
No, I think that's a good point. But what we often say on this show is that the longer a rumour hangs around for, the more likely it is to happen. The longer a fee stays around the similar sort of level, the more likely it is to happen. I've got a feeling this one might have legs.
Harry Maguire to Man United, really?
Yeah, genuinely. For around 90 million quid. It would not surprise me. I agree with you that the money is mad. But so is the transfer market at the moment, frankly. Talking of mad money, let's turn our attentions to today's Daily Mirror. United in for Gareth Bale. What do you reckon?
I mean, I'm just having deja vu. That's been our transfer window for the last 5-6 years. I would take him. Anybody's better than Alexis Sanchez on our right wing. But I mean, I don't know. Again, he's a player who's in his late 20s. He's not got that long left at the top of the game. I mean, I don't know. I mean, Wayne Rooney has been saying, you know, he supports Ole Gunnar Solskjaer in getting young players in who want to play for the club. I think signing big names has not done as well in the last few years, so we need to try and maybe have a different approach.
Do you think this is a mirrored image to the summer that Spurs need to have in as regards of sort of a direction of travel for the future? You know, he's obviously got a big overhaul there, Solskjaer, to do this season. Is it a case, can you see it being a case of getting in the players that will get results straight away, i.e. you look at the likes of Bale, Maguire, Premiership sort of, not proven, but of Premiership experience? Or is it a case of, or can you see it being a case of, like Rooney's come out and said, getting these younger players in, the likes of De Ligt and sort of Daniel Jones as well, you know, building
James.
A sort of, Daniel James, sorry, building a sort of dynasty, so to speak, that it's a group of players that he can work with for 6, 7, 8 years? Or is it going to be those big name stars that just to get them results in the next couple of years?
Are you talking about Man United, I suppose?
Man United,
yeah. For Man United, I think we've tried the big names for a while now. You know, we've sort of got Alexis Sanchez, Lukaku. A few seasons back, we had obviously Falcao, Di Maria. You know, we've made those marquee signings. We've flexed our financial muscle and said, look, we're Man United. We might not be where we were, but we can still buy this player, that player. And it's not worked out. You know, they come to the club and they're cursed. You know, they might be world-class players, but they can't do it at Man United because I have no idea why, but it just hasn't happened. I think Man United need to go back to basics now. And the fans especially need to say, how much do we expect? We have to maybe expect top four will be a good season for us next season, really.
There's a broader building. Question, Will, in terms of changes, which is that of the manager. Is Solskjaer the right man for the job?
I couldn't possibly say yet if he's the right man for the job, but I think he deserves a chance. I think, you know, obviously modern football, things move very quickly. But I think he deserves at least this season without any whispers of him getting the sack. I think he deserves a season where he's given time and space to do what he wants to do, and then we'll see. But it's like the players. We've tried the big name managers. You don't get any bigger than Jose Mourinho, and he by the club standards, he failed. So where do we go from there?
It's a very, very tough one. Will, thank you ever so much for your time. Will Lynn there, who is a journalist and Manchester United fan. What do you reckon, Graham? That Maguire transfer, silly money, but the fact that United and City are being linked, I think it could happen.
I think Maguire's been linked now for the last few transfer windows. You know, he's obviously an established England international now. He's probably one of the first names on Southgate's team sheet. I he needs to leave Leicester, I feel now. I think he's sort of outgrown Leicester. So with that in mind, you know, people are sort of looking, right, well, where's he going to go? Who can afford him? Who's going to double his money? I can't see him moving abroad. I don't think he's the sort of player that will fit into a team abroad. So that leaves him with England, you know. And when you look at who can afford him, who needs him, who can sort of give him what he wants, you're probably looking at really only Man United and Man City. Chelsea can't buy anyone. Tottenham are never going to pay that money for anybody anyway. Arsenal won't pay that sort of money for us. I can't see him ever going to Arsenal. And Liverpool don't need him. Maybe they do to partner Van Dijk, I don't know, because I still don't trust Matip or Lovren. So Liverpool's a possibility to get that establishment with Van Dijk. So that really and truly, through process of elimination, Johnny, that kind of only leaves the Manchester clubs. So I think
he won't stay at Leicester?
I don't think he will. I think this summer will be the one where he goes, do you know what, I've given you my service. I could have gone last year after the World Cup. I had a chance. Clearly, he could have had a chance, but he's gone, no, I'm going to give you another 12 months. You never hear him piping up about wanting to leave or anything, but I would be surprised at this age now, with no European football for Leicester as well, he's probably sitting there going, now's my time to get out and experience Champions League football and play at the highest level possible from now till the end of my career. And either Man United or Man City seem like the only feasible option. And if he had a choice, I would say City.
Mm. The question is whether Pep's going to think he's that ball player rather than just a meathead centre-half.
Well, this is the thing, Johnny. I mean, Pep's obviously loves the ball-playing centre-halves. My only concern there is with John Stones. Now, he was preferring, when push came to shove at the end of the season, he was preferring Vincent Kompany over John Stones. And John Stones found himself out of that team more than he'd found him in it. And I just feel there that I don't know whether Pep really trusts John Stones.
Well, look at his performance against Holland. I don't trust John
exactly.
Stones.
Exactly. So, yes, he's a fantastic athlete, John Stones. He's a fantastic size for a centre-half. You know, but so's Harry Maguire. And I don't think Harry Maguire is any slower than John Stones. There's a lot there with John Stones to be a world-class something. Now, I don't know whether that's a centre midfielder or a centre half. With Harry Maguire, what you see is what you get.
And a battering ram.
It's a battering ram, but it's a centre half. Now, he's not world-class. I don't think he ever will be. But what he is, he's a very, very good defender. And he's not the worst on the ball. I mean, he done a fantastic step over earlier in his own box. It was brilliant. Whether he meant it or not is another matter. But with everything that Man City have got going forward, it must be nice to have that reassurance that you have a centre-half
who's not going to mess about,
who is a defender. Mm. Let Harry Maguire defend. Let Nicolas Otamendi defend. Let Aymeric Laporte defend. And give the ball to everybody else. Mm. With John Stones, you're not really too sure whether he's concentrating.
It's a very, very good point. Portugal, of course, have been concentrating. They are moments away from being crowned champions in the first ever Nations League. It's Portugal 1, the Netherlands 0, with about 10 seconds left on the clock. Ronaldo, of course, does it again. Gonçalo Guedes, the game winner on the night. Talking of Guedes, he's a man who's been linked left, right and centre, not least with the French League at points. And coming up, it's over to Jeremy Smith, our resident French football expert, I should say, for all the news from across the channel.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
You're listening to the Transfer Rumour Mill here on Love Sport Radio with me, Johnny Burrow, and of course, Graham Butler. And I'm delighted to say that we're joined on the line by our resident French expert, Jeremy Smith, bringing us all the latest news from Ligue 1 and, Jeremy, for once, Ligue 2, because we're hearing that West Ham might have made a £10 million bid for Lorient striker, or forward rather, Alexis Claude Maurice.
Yes. I think that it's not the first time that Premier League clubs are now starting to look in Ligue 2, and Lorient have got a little bit of previous of producing some decent talents.
Guendouzi,
obviously. There's Ekwueme Manga, who's doing well at Cardiff. a couple of good strikers in Gamero and Gignac in the past as well. So they're a club that's sort of well known for bringing through these players, and definitely Claude Maurice is looks like the next one off the conveyor belt. And West Ham have made an offer, but there's lots of reports that Arsenal are mulling over putting something in as well.
What kind of player is he, and is he any good?
He's very good for Ligue 2. I think he's certainly got the potential to make the step up to Ligue 1. Whether he's ready to jump straight to the Premier League is hard to say. You kind of don't know until it happens. But as you said, Guendouzi is a perfect example that if you're good enough, then you should be able to take that step in your stride. In terms of the type of player he is, I think the obvious comparisons, even though it might be a bit of a step at the moment, is Lacazette and Nori, because he's played most of this season sort of attacking midfield or left wing, but definitely his sort of finishing ability, I think at some point he'll end up further forward and down the centre. He's a brilliant dribbler. He's got a good shot on him, a good shot from distance as well. I think half his goals have come from outside the area. He's even like Henry in that he seems to score very rarely with his head. But yeah, really good footballer. And I definitely think that even if right now possibly it's a risk bringing him straight into the Premier League, I think definitely within 2 or 3 years he could easily settle into the English top flight.
Jeremy, I must admit, when I saw this is a name I have absolutely no knowledge of whatsoever. I'd never heard of him, don't know anything about him. So excuse me if I'm sounding a little bit naive, but it's a really straightforward question. How old is he? And if he's a sort of 19, 20, 20, has he come through, I'm guessing he's French, has he come through any French youth teams like the under-17s, under-18s? Is he highly regarded, or is he 26, 27 that has been around sort of
he's
football?
He's a kid.
He's a kid.
He's a kid. He's 20. He came through Clairefontaine, which sort of renowned yeah. French training academy. He was actually in the same class in the same year as Kylian Mbappe. So,
slightly different paths there, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it feels like when you compare it to him, you think, oh, he's a bit behind where he should be for 20, but actually, he really is where he should be. It's just Mbappe, he's just on another level. So, I think he's straight out of Clairefontaine, he was linked with Lyon. And he turned them down. So I suppose there's two ways of looking at it. Maybe you could say that possibly he doesn't have enough sort of confidence in his own abilities, or he wanted to, you know, get first team football as soon as possible and work his way up from a lower level. I think possibly if Lorient had been promoted this year, which they probably should have done, they bottled it a little bit at the end. Maybe he'd have stayed for another year, but I think it's definitely time for him to try his luck at a higher level than Ligue 2.
Jeremy, we're also hearing rumours about Julian Draxler. Is he a winger? Is he a 10? And would he fit at Tottenham?
I think that's part of the problem. It's sort of he's in parts for PSG, he's played very, very well. So certainly at I think earlier on in this season, he really was looking excellent. But that's part of the problem with PSG, with Tuchel and his sort of tactical playing around, especially with the fact that PSG don't have a midfield. But Draxler is one of those players that's been shifted around quite a lot. I think he can play as a 10, but obviously there's Neymar ahead of him and then Di Maria when Neymar's been missing. He's sometimes had to put in a shift as more of a defensive midfielder, which I think is negating a lot of his ability. And I think he can play on the left as well. But I definitely think he's one of those players that I don't think it's doing him any favours that he can do a little bit of everything. I think if someone could just say, right, this is your position, or do what you can and play your heart out, then I think he could be a great addition to most teams. And
do you think he is off this summer, Jeremy?
PSG have pretty much said that he can go. Most of the players that are probably going to leave PSG are the ones who are probably surplus to requirements. But I think Draxler is slightly different in that PSG need the money, and I think he's the one that they feel that he's not completely indispensable. He'd be, you know, he'd do a job if he stayed, but he's the one that they think they can still get a really decent fee for and hopefully put that towards another player. So they're they've said they're willing to let him go.
Is there a sense of disappointment around Draxler in France? Because when he was coming through at Schalke, he was rated as this extraordinary talent. It's not quite happened for him.
I probably won't make many friends amongst PSG fans, but I think there's so many players in the team at the moment that you could say are a disappointment, that Draxler maybe gets a little bit ignored and maybe gets away with a bit more, you know, he could maybe deserve a little bit more stick than he gets. But I think people appreciate that he, you know, he works hard, he's tried to do a job wherever he's played, and it hasn't really worked out for him, but it's not necessarily his fault.
In terms of other players we're hearing about, I'm sitting opposite the wonderful Graham Butler, who is a Spurs fan. There's a question that he's going to want an answer to. This and Ndombele, any good?
Fantastic. the only question mark with him,
question marks. No. Moving on.
No question marks. he sort of plays in the image of Leon in that, 1 week he'll be completely unplayable and the next week he looks like he couldn't care less.
It'd be a good fit at Tottenham then.
And again, the thing with Leon is that usually he'll have his great games against the best clubs, and then in a match where, you know, they should comfortably win, that's the one where he looks a little bit disinterested.
Does he start games really slowly as well? Because he just fit in really well then.
No, he starts fine. He's one of those players, I think, where you can probably tell in the first 5 minutes if he's going to have a good match or not. But I mean, it's been spoken about all the way through his career. And actually, I think he had a trial, I think it was at Gangor, and they rejected him. And the reason that was given pretty much was, we don't like your attitude. But no one's ever said he's had a bad attitude. It just, by all accounts, he's extremely laid back. And I think sometimes it gets misconstrued as not caring. I think practically every time that Lyon have played PSG, even Amiens at the start of last season before he'd made the move, he played PSG. He actually played them three times in the league last year. He was pretty much man of the match in every match. He stepped up in Champions League matches. He's actually got more Champions League goals than league and goals. He's looked unfazed in his France appearances as well. So, yeah, I think he's a class act, and as long as you can get him sort of concentrating week in, week out, I think he's fantastic.
That's the thing I was just going to ask you, Jeremy. Is it a case of not so much being laid back or anything, is that he's so confident in his own ability that he knows when he plays it's the wrong way to adapt it, but you can almost sense from what you're saying that when he plays the lesser teams, it's almost like, I only need to play at 60-70% because I know I'm miles ahead of you. Is he the sort of guy that if he came to the Premiership, he knows that he has to be on his game week in, week out, and he can't afford to play at 60-70%? And would his game sort of reach a new level if he did come to the Premiership?
I think it would. Like I said, I think it's a problem that Lyon especially have had for a couple of years, and he's certainly not the only player in the team that has this problem. So I think if he's surrounded by players who are, you know, giving 100% every week, I know, you know, he'd be embarrassed to just show up when he feels like it. So, and obviously sort of step up in level, he'd have to show more each week. So, yeah, I don't think there'd be a problem there at all.
Jeremy, I'm fascinated by these questions raised about his attitude, because this is the first I've heard of this. Pochettino, of course, famously doesn't like signing players who he thinks are going to upset the apple cart. Do you think that Ndombele could fit into that category?
No, he's not, like I say, he's not a troublemaker. And even in terms of sort of the attitude and how he plays, it's not like he sulks or is diving around. He's not too easy to point.
You're going to say Neymar.
Yeah. he's nothing like that. It's just, you know, I'm loath to use the comparison for a Spurs fan, but you could compare him to someone like Ozil in that it looks like he doesn't care sometimes, but I don't think it is that. I think it could be that, you know, too much, too young. Again, he's sort of jumped up a couple of levels very, very quickly and hasn't been found wanting at all. So there might be a touch of arrogance, but it's not, I don't think it's a serious issue. I don't think it's something that Pochettino would be worried about.
Listen, if I had every top club in Europe fighting over me, I'd have a touch of arrogance as well. Jeremy, thank you so much for your time. Wonderful as ever. Jeremy Smith, their French football journalist and expert to boot. Coming up, let's turn our attentions to Spain. We'll zip over to La Liga. We'll be with Nicolai Lisberg, who's a Spanish football journalist based in Madrid.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
Johnny Burrow and Graham Butler here on Love Sport Radio for the Transfer Rumour Mill. And I'm delighted to say that we're joined on the line by Nikolai Lisberg, who's a Spanish football expert based in Madrid. Good evening, Nikolai. Thanks for joining us tonight. Let's start with a big name, Gareth Bale. Is he leaving Real Madrid or is he happy to just play golf?
That's a good question. I think Madrid would be happy to see him go, no doubt about it. They need the money. But it seems like, judging from the news today, that he's not going anywhere. He seems happy about just to play golf. I don't know what it is about those British players. Remember, Beckham didn't want to go. McManaman back in the days didn't want to leave Madrid as well. It doesn't seem like Bale is going to leave, but let's see if Madrid will be able to force him out, so to speak.
It's do you see that as a kind of a bit of a backward step from Bale himself? You know, is he sort of has he? I just don't get if you're not. I mean, we see a lot in the press and sort of on social media and watching videos and stuff that you might see something completely different. It's he genuinely looks like he's not liked there. That, you know, he's the bait in any problem that arises. Zidane clearly doesn't fancy him. Is this a sort of naive part on Bale's case? And would you not, if you was in Bale's shoes, would you not say, let me take my family home, back to where I'm liked, regardless of whether it's United, Spurs, whatever, but take me back to England, let me enjoy my football. I'm still a multi-millionaire. I'm not going to make any less money coming home. I don't understand how he's happy and content in an area that he's not liked.
No, that's what everybody's wondering, I guess, because you could argue when Madrid were winning the Champions League and he gets to play some of the finals, he still like got to lift the big trophies. But after this season that he had, after this season that Madrid had, after this rebuilding phase they are going through now, and knowing that the Bernabeu is going at you, they are whistling, they are booing every time you touch the ball, I don't see why he wants to stay in Madrid. Surely he can get a good contract, whether it be in Man United or in Tottenham, and he could sort of be like become a star, become someone that people would like again.
Well, so, if he goes to Tottenham, they will love him. They love him already. There will be no doubts about that. Talking of Spurs, one man who's been linked with them is Maxi Gomez, Celta Vigo's exciting little Uruguayan striker. The latest club he's being linked with are Aston Villa in today's Birmingham Mail. Is he off in the summer? Do you see him going to England?
I think he's leaving Celta Vigo. I think Olmo, that's for sure. He's been there 2 years now. He's been consistent in scoring goals, even this season where Celta was poor. But I don't think he's going to England. I think he's going to Valencia. There's a lot of talk about in the Spanish press that the Valencia, he seemed more keen on the Valencian project because they have approached him for months, and they followed him for a longer time. So he seems more convinced that he can make a mark for himself in Valencia. So I think Valencia is his new club and not Villa or Tottenham.
Nicola, I'm gonna throw another name at you as well now. We're flying through the Spanish league tonight. One that gets it for me, I see in the paper every single transfer window that doesn't seem to go away. And every year his hair gets a little bit longer. Antoine Griezmann. Is this the year where he finally is this the window where he finally leaves Atletico Madrid, or has Simeone sort of tied him down somewhere and restricted him from ever leaving?
Yeah, maybe that's why his hair grows longer, because he just keeps tying him in that hair. I don't know, yeah. I don't know what to say, because last year everybody was convinced. I was convinced that he was going to Barca. It seemed like that was the logical move. This year, he said himself a few weeks back, he said, I am leaving. It's a difficult decision. I'm leaving Atletico Madrid. It's time to try something new. I mean, when a player says that, and today he was out saying, I know where I'm going to be playing next season. It's a done deal, but I can't say anything as of now. So you have to be patient. With all that, you have to expect that he's leaving. Now the only question is, where is he going? Is it going to be Barcelona, as it seemed like a week ago, a few days ago, or is it going to be Paris Saint-Germain, as the Spanish press is writing about today? There are these rumours about the dressing room in Barcelona, that Messi, that Suarez, they don't want him in Barcelona, and fans don't want him because of what happened last year. So now the Spanish press is saying that maybe he's going to Paris instead. There's a lot of rumors, and it seems like it's changing every day. It's changing every hour. But I think it's between one of those two clubs that he will play next season.
If we can just stick with Atletico briefly, Diego Godin is a centre-half I've admired for years. When you see him on the biggest stage, he always produces. How has he managed to leave on a free transfer? I know you're going to say, well, his contract's run down, but someone that good and that world class, I struggle to work out how he can be allowed to leave on a free transfer. Was there an agreement there somewhere, or did they fall out, or what's the story behind that?
No, I don't think there was a fallout. I mean, he has, as you say, he's pretty much a legend in Atletico Madrid. He's maybe the one who symbolized the Simeone era the best, you know, like that hard defender, that no-nonsense defender who's brought them to two Champions League finals and a title. But there's definitely not a falling out. I think it's more like an agreement that said, okay, now he reconnects. I think he's 32 years, pushing 33. He's done his duty, so to speak, at Atletico Madrid.
Yeah.
He wants to try something new, and I think they just agreed that they said, okay, we'll let you try something new. I think they would have liked to get him on for a year or two, because he's still one of the best defenders in the league. But I think you could say it's a gentleman agreement.
Nikolai, wonderful to speak to you as ever. Thank you for your time. Nikolai Lisberg, their Spanish football expert based in Madrid. Graham, we're coming towards the end of the show, and I just want to get your take on a few of these deals and how realistic they are, because we like to talk about the rumours, but we also like to work out which is just nonsense. Which for your money is rubbish and which might have legs?
De Ligt obviously going somewhere. I think that is a foregone conclusion. I can't see him staying at Ajax for any much longer period. Rumours of Paris Saint-Germain in for Lloris. I can't see that happening. I don't see that happening. I'd be surprised, because goalkeeper is obviously a specialist position, you know, and it's not one that Spurs seem to have been covered. So I don't see that having legs. Draxler, no, I don't see that. I think Man United and Man City, I think Man United will make big moves in the summer. Who for is anybody's guess. As weird as it sounds, and I know I might just sound contradictive, I wouldn't be surprised if Bale stays in Spain for another year.
No, I wouldn't either, actually.
Purely because I think wages and a sort of deal for him will be the sort of thing that puts clubs off. You know, is it a permanent move? Is it a loan to a permanent? Are they going to ask for 30 million for a loan fee? I just see that being so complicated for whoever he would potentially go to. So I can't see him. I wouldn't be shocked if he stayed there for another year. But I think if we're going to finish on Spurs, I'd love to. I've seen a lot more of Lo Celso than I have of Bruno Fernandes, if I'm honest. Mm. I would love Lo Celso at Spurs, but Ndombele is the one.
Yeah, I would
love him there. But and Jake, as soon as I mention his name, Jake will go, oh, for God's sake, not again. Tielemans is the one.
Yeah,
Yuri Tielemans,
he's got to go somewhere.
Is the one I would love Spurs to pair Ndombele with. And if I had them two in my midfield for next season,
Champions League winners.
Honestly, it would make my dream come true. You know, 22, 23 years old. Pair of powerhouses in there. They would complement each other so well, but it's Tottenham and it's never going to happen.
Well, on that cheery note, Graham, it's been a fantastic show. Wonderful to spend an hour in your company.
Pleasure.
And we've got some glorious things from this show. It's what I love most about it, where I get told by our experts that all I thought was true, absolute rubbish, and Ndombele, possibly lazy, definitely brilliant. And it turns out that, of course, Maxi Gomez, he's not going to England at all. Join us next time.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.